really hard to make a significant change in your lifestyle if you're doing it all alone out on a limb. And so our plan is, when we go home, to do a little work within our church, or at least within our circle of friends, and see if we can find some others who will support us in this idea. And that's kind of what we're looking for here today, are some ideas that we can take back, and maybe we can share ideas right here and now about what constitutes enough, and are there areas in which we can cut back in our lifestyle. I think that after listening to Mary and some of the tapes that are available in the library, the concept of how much is enough goes back to the story of manna. The Israelites were given the manna and allowed to collect enough for their needs. If some needed more, they could collect more. If you needed less, you could collect less. Whatever your needs were, there was enough. If you collected too much, you didn't keep. Collect what you need, but no more. So the question we're starting off with is, what do we need? One further thing by way of introduction, what we're hoping to find out is some really specific things. You know, we've heard a lot of generalizations this week, and I guess we're looking for practice instead of theory. So with that, let's just kind of open it up to what anybody has to say.
My dad's funeral took place last March, and I've been here 2 summers now, so I know what Mary has to say, and her husband John, also some of the other fine speakers on this enough is enough theology. Anyway, I thought it was way past due to do something about funerals a little differently. First of all, it must stay spiritual, Christian, that is. So I made the coffin myself. And I was about to apologize to no person or groups of persons for doing so. And I haven't had the need to either. The $1,000 or better that was saved by doing so, and by the way, the pastor shared 25 minutes of the memorial service, which was an hour and a half long. We had communion with it. And I had something to say, the word, the effect that if you save money, what are you saving it for? And I told him what I was going to do with it, and I did. I'm using the word I all the time. You'll forgive the personal reference there. My wife wasn't quite in agreement at the start, but she ended up with the total agreement, as my 2 grandchildren, daughters, also helped make the coffin. $16.16 was the cost of the plywood at Woodburn, Oregon, where we lived. And they wanted to line it on the inside and out, and I said, fine. I got my staple gun on, and we made it very presentable to my point of view. And the hired undertaker had nothing but smiles when he saw it delivered in our pickup. And he had no pump. And I've been there since 1937. I grew up in Minnesota, but anyway, so we knew each other in more ways than one. I'm also in business in Woodburn, and so as the business community, there was a lot of eyes on this thing. The $1,000 that was saved, from the pulpit I pointed out, is going to be put for the still living. I challenge the people, how much powdered milk do you think it would buy for somebody anywhere? I don't care if it's in India or whatever. I sent it to Mother Teresa, by the way, in India. That's why I had it mine. She has meaningfully put good money to real work with no possible feedback of, you know, can't even get thanks for some of those dying people, and yet she stays there and helps. It's very easy for me to, and also the rest of you, I know it is, as a human being, to help someone who can make sure I'll help you back. And I don't buy that. If you want to help somebody, go help someone who cannot positively pay you back. Can't even say thank you, so far as long. I'll go out there and help that guy.
I really appreciate you sharing that with us. That is the kind of thing that probably would never have occurred to me, and I think that's a tremendous resource within our culture. Money is really spent there needlessly.
Anybody want to ask questions later or not? You're sorry. I'm done. I'm here for a week and 2 days.
Human nature is a strange thing, you know. When I say strange thing, it varies from individual to individual. There's been an old saying for many years, and some of you may recall it. I had a friend and I had some money, and gave my friend some money, and I'll have neither friend nor money. Just because you give something to somebody does not necessarily mean that they appreciate it. Not at all. For many years, the farmers in the Midwest raised more corn and wheat than we could consume in this country. Congress operated on the principle, and so did the administration, whatever it was, Democrat or Republican, that as the economy of the farmer went, so went the economy of the nation. So they wanted the farmers to produce and make a livelihood, even though they produced more grain than we could use. So what to do with it? Well, were stored here and there in elevators, but they were insufficient, and so we began giving millions of tons of wheat and corn to our allies in Europe. We also gave it to, say, to India, which never was able to raise enough rice to feed its people. In many cases, I don't know whether this is true in India, I don't really don't recall now. But so we gave, say, a million tons of grain to France, this particular country, for them to give to their needy people. Well, they grind it up in flour first, of course. Well, a lot of that never got to the needy people at all. Somebody had to handle it on that side, some kind of an officialdom. And the officialdom, many times, did not see fit to give the flour that it could have been turned into to give to the poor. They used it commercially and made money for themselves. Congress, when they enacted legislation to authorize this kind of a gift, shall I say, after a while added an amendment that prohibited, sought to prohibit, the officialdom in France, as an illustration, from handling it commercially. Well, of course, France was not under our legal jurisdiction, so they handled it the way they wanted to anyhow.
But what is in it? Some of the things that we try to do for people don't really turn out the way we had in mind.
That's true.
And I tend to agree that that's probably true. And yet, the thing I think that I feel is my responsibility is to still do those things that I can to have an impact. And, you know, it may not come out the way I want on the other end.
Well, of course, the important thing is, how this relating.
Yeah.
The important thing, as I see it, is our desire to help.
Right.
And I think that's what the Lord looks to.
Look to our hearts. Several years ago, when our children were in high school, around Christmas time, we could try to think through what it would mean not to give gifts as we had been used to giving gifts. I think the best I can say is we kind of went along, but that's about it. And we decided that as much discussion as we'd make gifts for each other and not purchase any. And we try to get any kind of materials around the house, wood bins, whatever. So we each took on the project. He took all the feathers and spent, I guess, about a month on our own making Christmas gifts for each other. My part of it was very jolly. I'd never done that before. I'm not a craft person. When it comes to wood, the first thing is I try to make some wooden things, which is a joke in itself. But I had a great time. I had the help of a dear friend who was a teacher, and he advised me how to go about doing it. He's been a shop teacher, and I said, look, we exchanged those gifts Christmas Day, and it was a great time. We haven't done it since. But we didn't spend any money. The money that we would have spent on Christmas gifts, we used for special offers because of our denomination. That was very meaningful. The kids have not forgotten it. They joke about it. I wouldn't want to do it again, but we did it.
Yeah. It seems to me a really good example of where too much is more than enough in our own family. It, Christmas becomes a real hassle trying to think of something different to buy for people. None of us need anything. And so we're going around hassling ourselves to buy things that people don't need. It's a great place to help them.
That reminds me of what my husband has been telling my family for years. We always sold to mothers, and at Christmas time, and that's just great. We're enjoying it more now than we ever have. And anyway, they say to me, what can we buy, Bill? He's quite shy, they don't tell. He doesn't just, have a little list in the back of his head to tell people what he might like. And if he did, it'd probably be some kind of Gregorian chant music or something that they could find. But he said, well, if I can either wear it, he said, just give me a card. And so that's kind of been the theme that we've just gone on for about maybe 5 years. If I can't eat it or wear it, forget it. And so that means that we get cheese and tea and maybe a bottle of wine. My mother is great for getting glasses. And I have a sister, and she always manages to, she manages to find three beautiful glasses, one for my sister Mary and her sister. And that's really nice to have a new boss, and I know I'm going to have something I can wear. And so that's what we've been doing, and maybe buy shirts for Bill for years. And it's just great because that's what he needs in his job. And so we hardly ever buy our own clothes, and it's kind of neat. Right? And now my son, Mary has a little girl of his own. Our little thing is just kind of been, now you do for your daughter what we need for you. And yet, I found myself with my daughter-in-law in the store buying her a new pair of jeans for her birthday. And that's working pretty well. And the next generation down just kind of we buy for the next generation down. So I get my clothes from my mother, and I give my, I buy it for my daughter-in-law. And that's me. That's working for us.
I'm sorry, I got stopped, so I wasn't here at the beginning. How did you ask the question at the beginning of the forum?
Well, the thing that we personally are struggling with, and we brought up to Larry, and he suggested this, is how do we decide just what is enough? For instance, we probably overall will spend about $500 on this trip up here. Mm-hmm. Now, is that a good way to use our funds, or would we have been better off to buy rice for Cambodians with that $500? I'm looking for conversation on really specific things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of things we could cut out, any of us could cut out of our lifestyle if we wanted to do the maximum in cutting down our consumption of resources and maybe channeling excess income that we have into other possibly more productive methods.
One way to answer that question is probably everyone's going to have to do it for himself or herself.
Yeah.
So, okay. And that doesn't mean there aren't some good things to talk about, but probably, finally, that's true. Another awareness we ought to have is most of the world does not have the luxury to sit around at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Most people are living the way they're living because they have no choice.
Yeah.
But we all know that.
That we're among the privileged few that have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just give you a couple illustrations of when someone does that, for themselves. Nobody else telling them what to do. I just want to give you a few of my friends who have found how freeing it is to do what we're talking about doing. The friend in the on the clergy roster of the American Lutheran Church, he and his wife, after a couple of years of really experimenting with simple living, and they are way beyond Mary. I mean, they have a goat, and that's their milk, and it's just fun to be there, and they've enjoyed it. It's not deprivation, but they really are, built their own log cabin and all that. They determined over the last couple of years what is enough in the way of a cash income for them to have a full life. Then they look, and there's not a single parish in the ALC that they're not able to move to because they're below any salary in any church. In other words, they have increased the possibility tremendously by having financial needs that mean they have more flexibility than anybody else I know. And they just took a call to the Black Hills of South Dakota in a little parish, exactly where they wanted to be with the kind of people they wanted to be, in a parish that never before had been told by a district president they could call a pastor because their salary was too low. So they're where they want to be only because they sat down and did that one. What other kinds of freedoms do you get? Had a Jewish lawyer tell me, he heard me speak, and he said, I don't share your theology, but I sure share a lot of what you're talking about. My wife and I, when we got married, decided we would consciously always live a little beneath our means. So what that means is we always have more than enough. We go to our contemporaries, classmates of mine, and it's poor talk every night. How poor they are and what have you, and how they have to scrape. We have more than enough. We bought a house less than we can afford. We ride a bike instead of a car. We're just always grateful, and they have the luxury of benevolence, and they're very generous people, and he told me how they spend their money, and for vacation trips and what have you. It's a very simple thing to simply choose that your desires are less, and then you have a lot more. I'm sure people can add to that. It just amazes me that when I lead a retreat on this, almost never is there anybody in the room who has done what you're saying you'd like to do this afternoon. Seems to me such a simple first step that gives us freedom. Decide how many shirts is enough, and then don't get more than that. Decide how much the future financial security is enough. And don't spend more than that on insurance. Spend it on something else. But we really don't do that very often.
As we started looking into this week, we were a little amused that there are four of us and we have 14 pairs of footwear and among four of us up here.
Yeah.
Maybe a little desperate. That's another kind of question. Can I really justify spending $30 or maybe $50 on a pair of running shoes? Those are the kinds of things I'm struggling with. Maybe that really is trivial and dumb to some people, but that's the kind of thing I get hung up with in my life. How can I rationalize doing things like that?
I had an experience in the bookstore a little while ago. I started looking around, and this is happening in the case library too. I started looking around at all the books that I wanted, and this old, very familiar feeling started coming up from the pit of my stomach, and it was, I want them all. Oh, yes. Oh, it's not a joke. It really isn't. Because it's a scary thing. And I do it with fabric. This is my own personal little sin, that I have this closet full of home that I couldn't sew up if I lived to be 150. Mm-hmm. But still, it sits there, and it is my private little cord of stuff that just gives me that same feeling inside. And there's the manna. You know, there it is, getting rotting.
Yeah. I think that you're a good American. You've learned the lesson well, and that is to buy, consume.
Anyway.
You are encouraged to buy the book.
How do you fight that? One of my most favorite things to do is to get the Sunday paper, you know, the one that sits, and read the ad. I really enjoy that. And I don't know where you get the strength to say no more.
Yeah.
You know, and it's easy to say it here. It's easy, you know, to say, I'm going to be accumulating, I'm going to do it. But I go home next week, and what do I do then when those, you know, that starts happening again? There's the word deaccumulate. That's super. There aren't any words to say. There aren't any.
It's not part of our culture.
That's what we discovered in economics. We were talking about how does one consume less? How do you talk about it in economic terms? There isn't any conversation. There's no words. for it. I think the thing that frustrates me the most, and my mom, who I think made a very insightful comment to me, said, you know, people, young people nowadays, and she wasn't really accusing me or accusing my generation, but feel that they have to have everything right away. Good, best, better, everything right away. I have probably 20 sets of friends, acquaintances and friends who have either recently gotten married or are working at a job. And what do they have to do? They have to, within a year or two of marriage, have a new car, $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 house so that they can, have a family. It can't be a small house. It has to be the best house. It has to be in the best neighborhood. They have to have the best clothes from the best store. And just recently, I started buying better things, like a pair of good leather shoes rather than polyurethane shoes. But I feel that I can get much more use out of those leather shoes than I can get out of polyurethane, plus they're better for your feet. I think I can justify that, but I can't justify how people go out and buy hundreds and thousands of dollars on credit. And, just to have, just to be able to say, I have a house, I have a new car, I have all new furniture in my house, I have everything sticky. I'd rather live poorly and have less furniture, not own a house or whatever, and, not have built up to my neck or whatever. I guess I'm not a capitalist, and I don't like the American economy, but I've been told that we need capitalism to make things go. But I don't know. Does anybody have any comments, pro or con, on that principle?
I think that you just described the American dream, though, and the answer that you're sitting back here said the same thing, that we talked long and hard yesterday about the American dream. And none of us mentioned money, but when it came right down to it, money was the American dream, to have the house, the car, and the boat, and, maybe a jet ski, and you can think of a lot of other things. That's the American dream for the majority of Americans, and I'm in that majority. And the thing about it, like what John was saying about poor dog, every single time I get together with my married friends, that's all I hear about. We can't get along, we can't get the house, what are we going to do? Well, big deal. And it isn't,
I have a layman from my church with me who's the head of an art department in Adford. And I've had a lot of conversations with him. And it's interesting the way we're manipulated by the business world. All that manipulation, of course, I've got to do some practice for the church. Not only what I hear and feel and listen to him, but our church, our men and women's groups also does some work for a testing service. They go in and view raw ads before they're in their polished form, TV ad, and they react to that ad before it's finally polished and put on the airwaves. So as you sit in on some of these sessions, you become aware of the manipulation that's going on and what they're trying to do through that ad. And when you stop and think of what you pay for each product that you buy and how much of that cost is the advertising portion of it, it really becomes a tricky process.
And I think the question too then is, what can we do about that? Because they are doing that because we respond. What can we do?
We only do it because it works.
And they change it constantly. How can we keep ahead of them? It's impossible.
another side thought to that is that the cost of that you pay for the product in the department store that covers the shoplifting system is 10-12% of what you pay for merchandise paying for shoplifting. If we somehow or other could keep our eyes open and report that sort of thing, because it's costing us money. I hear people say, yeah, I saw so-and-so shoplift, but I didn't want to get involved, didn't want to say anything about it. I feel when I see it that I want to say something about it because it's costing me and everyone else money.
I think you're an excellent.
Living in Hawaii has been a tremendous experience for us. We've come in relationship with Samoans and Tongans who are related to immigration groups to the United States, and that's from Pacific Islands. The practice and understanding of the extended family and the difficulties that Samoans and Tongans are having adapting to ways of living in the United States when they have depended on the topic of the extended family for all their needs. Not barter, but not buying either. Knowing that you will be taken care of because you are part of an extended family. And that's not just an immediate family, but it goes on and on and on. And the place that the elders play in that whole scheme of things. It's been very helpful to us because in my congregation we have a Tongan fellowship, about 90 Tongans. And we have become very close to them and have learned a great deal about what the extended family means just for them, just how they survive in new land and the difficulties of that. But it has pushed us to raise some real questions of ourselves and say, what would it mean for us with the background that we have to begin to think of an extended family for the next 20 years as we begin to look toward retirement? And it's led us to enter some dialogue conversation with them and learn some very valuable lessons about what it means to depend on others. So much so that we are struggling now with three or four other couples, most of them older than us, to try to envision a sort of a community where we will depend on each other as we grow older. And what that would mean. And we're real curious about it. There's a real struggle. Because every time we talk about it, we come across all the economic reasons why we can't do it. And we're now at the point of looking at the locations in the U.S. as possibilities. We're talking about 4, 5, 6 families to hopefully gracefully grow old together and be handling each other for all our needs. That's what that means. But we receive that from these new immigrants who are coming from Samoa, which is a very helpful kind of exercise for us.
The group you're talking about, those extended families, laterally, not vertically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's interesting. That the second time that you brought out reaching out to people that were older and getting information from people outside the group, I think that's really important. Like these fire people, that's a way that we found that we've been able to save some money that we would have spent and get some information that we never would have been able to have because they have know-how and skills that I didn't know how to do. And you can tap that. And they're just delighted to share.
I think one thing that keeps me away from advertising somewhat is simply by not owning the television.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know the products that are around. I don't know the new products.
Right.
And it just flows, I mean, a lot of this stuff, and I don't pay attention to it, and I'm not aware of as much not having the latest this or that. And I don't know if I would recommend this.
You find that to be a disadvantage to you in any way. It seems to me that is probably the main method of conveying our contemporary culture is television advertising. Are you out of it?
Well, I may be out of it, but I have never enjoyed television. In high school, I figured all my friends must, I mean, they loved it, they got something out of it, and I figured there must be something worthwhile, so I picked Wednesday night as my night to watch television so I could discuss this, and I just, like, approached this like a homework assignment, but I found I didn't like it. And I found out I was very annoyed by movies getting me the emotional thing inside, and interrupting it with an advertisement. There are times there are some specials which I enjoyed on the same television as
Machine. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit. I mean, if I were an auto worker right now, listening to this conversation, mm-hmm. I'd have some real questions about how you care about movies. Mm-hmm. Or a hodge finally, how you care about
movies. I'm glad to see that raised because I wondered if in the whole village there was no one who really sees the other side of this question and feels that art and our time is seems to be based on broken stamping. This is how we're going. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Well, what do you do with that? I mean, I'm on the phone with that. When you start talking about, you know, that's me, that's what I remind you of it because a lot of the land that they work with, they will not really kind of see that. Investments in these. I mean, people want to be supported on a land base. That land base is not available for people from $1,000 to $3,500 an acre. Rent from $90 to $150 an acre for land that you need the land base for living for people who want to raise them stuff. I can't afford it. I don't think the auto works can either.
We have kind of the same predicament in the area from the food summers to the timber area. Mm-hmm. And there's a great amount of unemployment there right now because the housing market is
collapsed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good question for which, you know, I'm certainly not knowledgeable enough to have the answers, except for one thing I know is that our economy is highly capital intensive and maybe could somehow be altered to become more labor intensive, so more people can be employed.
Well, I think too that we are not willing to change our standard of living. One of the states mentioned the fact that if we took all the money that everybody made and distributed amongst everybody in the world, each family would get $8,000. Well, what would you do if suddenly you had $8,000? To live on. The people that have nothing to live on now would just go out of their minds with greed. But most of us would just absolutely, we'd just give up because $8,000 would get us through 2 months probably. I think we really need to think about changing, you know, some of the standard of living that we have. We aren't going to be able to live the way we have been living.
If we only had $8,000 a piece to live off, first thing you know, everything would come down, and then you could start living off the $8,000.
But then, you know,
the problem you were talking about, the job problem, the depression problem, and that's why there aren't any words to talk about what we're trying to discuss today. There's really not a language in the economic world to talk about it properly, and because what happens, I know to me, when I try to talk about it, is that I start getting things thrown at me like, you're a commie, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not a commie. I used to be a Marine. I guess I'm not really a peacemaker. I don't know how to get a handle on it. The reason I'm so aware now of it is because we went through the bottle bill problem here in Washington State. We tried to pass a bottle bill for returnable beverage containers. And I collected signatures in this state for a year and a half, and I would be willing to bet you that 85% of the people in the state of Washington want a bottle bill, and they were willing to settle on a nickel deposit, which is what we got 25 years ago. And, I mean, I think it would be 20 cents now, but $1 million ad campaign, television, everything to work to save about 30 jobs in the glass industry in Seattle. It was about what amounted to. And the people in this state thought that was so important, they voted against it. And so we voted it down. But we had $70,000 and they had $1 million.
Mm-hmm. About that campaign that really bothered me was the campaign of the people.
We got
the quote from the bottle bill was, they told us to keep on recycling.
Yeah. We're
most
not.
Of, most of it's recycled into the ditch on the side of the road.
You can recycle glass.
You can't find anybody to take it to recycle.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. We give it to them free. And they make my lot. They bottle stock 9 cents. To them, they recycle them. They refill them. The beer bottles. Mm-hmm. At least 6 times. And some of the good old bottles that they had years ago in the 40s and they recycled, some of them have been recycled over 200 times.
But you have to look at that as something in a way that they're not, you know, tearing something off the cart. It's out of our pocket, but at least it's being used. Which in some cases, I think, you know, that's where the problem is that we are living so wasteful. We go to church and drink our coffee out of a styrofoam cup, and then, take several napkins and go to a drive-in restaurant, and I throw away so much. Garbage. I mean, I can't even get it all in a little bag, you know. I can't get it all pounded down there. And these, you know, all these questions keep coming up unless it's enough. And when you stop going to McDonald's because they advertise extensively and they use too much paper and they kill all the, you know, there was another food. What can we do as you and I as individuals? I think that we can do something. But I'm not sure what. You know, to do what
I'm wondering is if it's very easy to make the commitment to do with less before you make a goal commitment as far as something, a lifestyle, someplace where you're going to be after you've been with less. I don't know if that makes sense. John Trum had the example of the pastor who had decided to start doing with less, and then got to the position where they could afford any lifestyle they chose as far as on the downward end of it. I chose to go back to school wondering how I could possibly, the book said I couldn't make it. And I decided I was going to go to school. And of course I made it. There's a way, and there's always a way. But I'm wondering if I could have, I do with less. I don't drive nearly as much. I can't afford it because there was other thing that I had said was more important. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if I would ever have been able to, I'm wondering how easy it is to get to that point of doing with life unless you have something else out there that is, would you have been able to do it if you hadn't moved to a farm and wherever?
Probably not.
But the problem too is that here it's easy to set goals. I can say to myself, I will not drink any more canned pop up here. I won't drink any more canned pop. I just really shut that stuff down. But boy, you wait till I get down and see what happens. You know, if it really, and I guess that's kind of where the thoughtfulness that comes from. I can make some plans for myself. But then I think, they're really not worth it. Or I guess what I'm looking for is the support of whether what I'm going to do is worth it. Can I make a difference?
I've done that with a couple times in my life, and it's really neat to accomplish it. You know, like saying you're not going to eat a certain kind of food because of whatever, or you're not going to do something, or drink a certain kind of cup, or drink a can. As opposed to body, or even, you know, or even lifestyle, I'm only going to do one thing a week rather than seven, and I'm going to do something for it, you know. And it's been really, I think, getting through it has been really, setting a goal and then having a goal work. Week by week by week is what keeps working for me.
So what she said is really true. You've got to set your goal.
Mm-hmm. Or like with the TV thing, that's really interesting because I will not watch more than like 3 or 4 hours of TV a week. And I set the goal for myself and stuck to it, and I love it. I spend my time doing so many things and doing new things.
Alan, get on your side.
I think one of the angles that takes care of a little bit of that economic problem, a little bit of the problem with how do you deal with your neighbor at this point, whether an individualist is kind of thing, you know, is to deal with who owns the land. And to maybe work for a wider distribution of land than most people. And then smaller communities have a basis in the land and work with more people. And then I think more jobs, basic ones, and basic kind of needs, even the basic needs. I see that as probably the best result. There's an alternate lifestyle, making an alternate lifestyle possible. But I was, you know, doing the best possible for most people.
Why the thing is the opposite of that, whether it's an ever larger corporate quantity.
Yeah. That's right. And that's quite one of the things. You have such a fragile economy. Because, you know, it's based upon high consumption.
Do you still have a comment?
Oh, I know you're funny. I guess I, somebody said something, but I guess it was your wife, something about support for different kinds of students, and I guess we have sort of found that in a key thing for us, finding other people who have the same kinds of goals and values, and kind of making a little network for ourselves, and not necessarily people who live nearby, in our case, there are students that many, but just kind of strengthening those bonds.
I feel like that's really critical if you're going to make a significant change in the way to find some kind of support.
I think it's important to start. You can sit and talk about it, and unless you start something, and you know, for each of us that might be something different, when you make it something concrete, you make it an action instead of a theory, then you're on your way.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy, you asked before about, you know, how to make it work when we're out of here. I think if you've got a step concrete in it, like John was saying before, exactly how many is enough? And if you have it down, 10 shirts is what I need. When you go shopping, that's going to stick in your mind a lot more than some vague theories about, well, we live a little bit too high. And I think you have to get it down. You have to sit down with pencil and paper and decide exactly how many is what you need. And I think that's easy to stick to. I find myself doing all kinds of little, almost strange things to keep myself going and keep remembering. Every once in a while, I went to McDonald's, I'll tell them not to wrap it up.
Yeah,
because I don't need to unwrap it, throw it away. Or at a restaurant, when you know something comes with 8 courses and you don't need that much, tell them not even to bother bringing it. Little things like that. Maybe it doesn't do that much for the economy or for the farmer or whatever. It keeps me thinking that, hey, I can say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a whole list of things like that that you can start doing so that it becomes a habit. It's something that it keeps you constantly thinking about it. And it's fun to tell somebody everything that you don't want the paper.
We give you a second look. That was all they had, because they obviously like that.
They had one car for about 10 people. Mm-hmm. And they took them. It was very effective.
Well, running pretty close to 5 o'clock, and there's some things I'd like to mention by way of resources here. This important method enough is really a good one to cause you to think. And there are several others in the bookstore similar to this. There are also several suits back there. Dealing with one I listened to today that was on the lifestyle, precepts and lifestyle camp, and then the one on the theology of enough. I'd like to read a quotation from this particular book. It seems to me that to be kind of a rallying cry if we're really committed to kind of scaling down our consumption. And so it says, I suggested to start the acceptance of a motto appropriate to a battered but glorious coat of arms. The price tag is too high. Often, we shall have to apply these words quite literally. As a family, we can't afford a color TV or a continental holiday television. And the car will have to do another 2 years at least. We haven't needed them, scarcely one of them up to now, and no amount of salesmanship is going to persuade us that we need them now. If last year's luxuries become this year's necessities, our income will need to go up a lot quicker. But why on earth should it? Why do you con into joining the inflationary rat race? We don't have to keep up with the Joneses. Let them draw ahead until they are out of sight. For us, the price tag is too high. If a few million citizens could learn to have fun with that simple slogan, we would be moving a lot nearer to a stabilized cost of living index, and the manufacturers would be compelled to turn their ingenuity to more productive and humanly useful goods. So that might answer the part of the question about what will become of our economy if we all quit consuming. And then one other thing that has been really significant to us this week, and I want to read it right now since we are going out tomorrow, is the slogan for them. The summer up here is a theme.
O Lord God, who callest thy servants to venture, to venture, the which we cannot see the ending, by paths we dead and trodden, and through perils unknown. Give us faith to go out with good courage, not knowing whether it will go, but only that thy hand is leading us and thy love supporting us through Jesus Christ.